sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The show you'll hear today was first aired in 2008. You'll hear some updates on Obama and your civil liberties at the end. So here goes.
We in the 9/11 Truth Movement don't claim to know exactly what did happen on 9/11, but there are two things that we do know. One is that the official conspiracy theory can't possibly be true, and the other is that there's a cover-up going on. And what we would like is a new and independent investigation into the events of 9/11. Why is it important to have a new and independent investigation into 9/11? Because it has been the event that has been exploited by our government to bring us two wars, torture, secret prisons, an executive power grab, the curtailment of our civil liberties, and the list goes on. The FBI has stated that it has no evidence linking Osama bin Laden to 9/11. Yet our president-elect, Barack Obama, wants to increase our efforts to capture Osama bin Laden and wants to send more troops to Afghanistan. By following the oil and gas reserves and pipeline routes, the two wars make more sense than by following alleged terrorist activity. But Americans wouldn't have approved of two wars and the killing of millions of people for oil and gas. Today you're going to hear a speech by Nancy Murray, that was given at the Boston Tea Party Conference held in Faneuil Hall in Boston in December of 2007. The event was organized by the Boston 9/11 Truth Group. She'll be discussing the disturbing erosion of our civil liberties post-9/11. Nancy Murray works for the ACLU in Massachusetts. She's introduced here by Colonel Bob Bowman.
Nancy Murray has been director of the Bill of Rights Education Project at the ACLU of Massachusetts for the past 18 years. She has also directed the Civil Liberties Task Force, which focuses on post-9/11 developments. We welcome her tonight to address the ongoing post-9/11 threats to our civil liberties. Ladies and gentlemen, Nancy Murray.
Hello, everybody. I'm going to speak fast because there are so many threats I want to fit them all in, and we have very little time. In his New York Times column of September 3rd, Roger Cohen wrote about the post-9/11 period that, quote, "The United States was not previously a homeland. It was just our land," end quote. He goes on to say that this unhappy word, homeland, quote, "with its Orwellian echoes, its sense of exclusion rather than inclusion, its faint fatherland-like echoes, seems to capture the closing and the menace and the terror refrain with which we have all learned to live," end quote. These words, terror and homeland, are sprinkled like salt and pepper in the Bush administration's 90-page 2007 National Strategy for Homeland Security, a document that does Orwell proud. It gives a summary of the tools which the government says are essential to keep you safe, some of which I will briefly describe in my remarks tonight. And then it states, quote, "The United States has a domestic legal system that supports the investigation and prosecution of terrorist activities while simultaneously protecting individual privacy, the First Amendment rights of association, religious freedom and free speech, and other civil liberties. We are a nation built on the rule of law, and we apply our laws to defeat terrorism while always preserving our liberties," end quote. You should read this document just to get a sense of this Orwellian rhetoric. It means nothing but how it is crafted in all these official publications. So that's the PR. What's the reality? In the brief time I have, I want to make 10 points that give a very bleak picture of the state of our democracy and Constitution. Point one. In spite of significant grassroots organizing, both in Massachusetts and across the country, the USA Patriot Act was reauthorized on March 9, 2006, without being fixed. There were at best only some cosmetic changes. Its expanded government powers are routinely being used for criminal law enforcement, enabling law enforcement agencies to do an end run around the Fourth Amendment. And in September of this year, two different federal district courts struck down some Patriot Act provisions as unconstitutional. But that is unlikely to be a meaningful check on executive branch power as long as the president claims, quote, inherent authority as commander-in-chief to run things as he sees fit. Two, we learned last March from the Justice Department's Inspector General that the FBI has been abusing its power to issue national security letters under Section 505 of the Patriot Act. These are the administrative subpoenas issued without any kind of court oversight, demanding that businesses, internet service providers, and librarians turn over records. The recipients of these letters, 143,074 were issued in the period 2004 to 2006 alone. And all those recipients remain gagged, except for four of our ACLU clients. They are the librarians from Connecticut, on whose behalf we filed a secret lawsuit, which eventually resulted in their being ungagged, but too late for them to be able to testify before Congress about the reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Recently, we learned that it is not just the FBI that is using and abusing national security letters. The Defense Department and the National Security Agency are too, in spite of rules designed to keep the military out of domestic law enforcement operations. Three, we learned that the National Security Agency, this is the high-tech star of the 1998 movie Enemy of the State, it has been carrying out domestic surveillance without getting warrants from the secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, as the 1978 FISA law requires. The NSA has been intercepting phone and email records with the cooperation of major telecommunications firms. And the government has invoked executive privilege to block investigations and state secrets privilege to get cases thrown out of court. It recently scared the Democratic-controlled 110th Congress into endorsing a warrantless domestic spying program by passing the so-called Protect America Act. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi decried the damage that this legislation did to the Constitution, even as she permitted it to be voted on the day preceding the August 2007 recess. So much for the legislative check on the executive branch. The Protect America Act, which is described at length, by the way, in a civil liberties toolkit I put on the back table there. This act is due to expire on February 5th, 2008. The House has passed the Restore Act, which is also described in that document. It's better than the Protect America Act, but it does not go nearly far enough to protect our rights. However, at least it doesn't give the telecommunications industry immunity from lawsuits for violating our privacy rights. So that's in the House. The Restore Act has passed. Meanwhile, the Senate is poised on Monday to hear a version of the bill which Senator Reid is allowing to be voted on, which would basically restore the Protect America Act and at the same time would grant immunity and completely eliminate warrants and court review of government spying. Incredibly, after a secret meeting with Attorney General Mukasey and National Intelligence Director Mike McConnell, on this Thursday, Senator Reid has said, okay, we can vote on the Rockefeller version, which is really bad, on Monday. So this is the Democrats in charge of the House and Senate. Of course, if Congress does pass a bill the president doesn't like, this president is likely to append a signing statement to it saying he doesn't have to obey it, as he did to the McCain Amendment against torture and to over 1,100 portions of other laws. And then it's very likely that it won't be enforced. Number four, What happens with all the data that is being seized by intelligence and law enforcement agencies? It is feeding a rapidly growing homeland security industrial complex. Despite Congress's refusal in 2003 to fund the Defense Department's Total Information Awareness, you'll recall John Poindexter's program to collect electronic data on everyone to look for patterns of terrorist indicators, despite Congress is refusing to fund it, total information awareness type operations are thriving. According to the Government Accountability Office, there are nearly 200 of them. Huge databases are being constructed to connect the dots through data mining to keep track of so-called credible threats, such as Quaker anti-war groups who found themselves in the Defense Department's Talon database. 40 states now have fusion centers, which amass information to be shared among a range of government agencies and private security operations, free of any kind of oversight or accountability. And a few days ago, the ACLU released a report outlining our serious concerns about the fusion centers, both here in Massachusetts, where Governor Mitt Romney established one in 2005 without state legislative approval or oversight, and elsewhere in the country. We have tried to penetrate the secrecy surrounding the Commonwealth Fusion Center, but have only been able to get limited information about what it is doing. There are indications that it has access to exhaustive data on private individuals, including their political views, that it brings private corporations into the intelligence process, further threatening our privacy, and that it involves military personnel in troubling ways. Now, aspects of John Ashcroft's Operation TIPS, which Congress also refused to fund when it was first proposed, are also alive and well. We now have a Department of Homeland Security program training firefighters who respond to emergency calls and who don't need a search warrant to enter homes. In the words of the November 25th Associated Press, quote, they are trained to be on alert for a person who is hostile, uncooperative, or expressing hate or discontent with the U.S., or who has maps, photos, materials that seem out of place, and little or no furniture other than a bed and a mattress, end quote. In Massachusetts, members of the public call in hotline tips that get dumped into databases and must be checked out despite the huge waste of resources involved. A friend of mine was visited by state troopers as the result of such a tip. She asked what other kinds of tips they had been tracing recently, and they told her they'd just chucked out a report that a man of Middle Eastern appearance was seen driving a rental van on the Southeast Expressway. I have to wonder if this is a good use of law enforcement time. Now, one program has captured the data of everyone in this room if you have traveled out of the country by car, boat, or plane over the last 6 years. And this is the automated targeting system, which searches for, quote, indicators of possible illegal and other activities, end quote, and then assigns travelers a risk rating. These files will be kept for 15 years, and who knows who will have access to them and what the information will be used for. So we're getting bloated databases created. One such is the Terrorist Screening Center, which has now 860,000 names on its terrorist watch list. They are so riddled with inaccuracies and other mistakes that there were, just last year, tens of thousands of false positives at the airports. Number five, the new Homeland Security Industrial Complex is in the process of transforming domestic law enforcement. Local police and state agencies have access to the fusion centers and are contracting to use military spy satellites and unmanned military-style drones for domestic aerial surveillance. And at the same time, Posse Comitatus, the Reconstruction Period law that keeps the military out of domestic law enforcement, has been undermined by the White House executive order and a congressional amendment attached to a must-pass military spending bill. Six, The presumption of innocence and other due process protections have been undermined as we enter the era of pre-crime, previewed in the movie Minority Report. This guilty until proven innocent approach has not just devastated lives, it has seriously frayed relations between Arab Americans and Muslim communities and law enforcement. Among the 5,000 people who have been detained in secret as terrorist suspects or material witnesses since 9/11, and the more than 100,000 people who have been ethnically and religiously profiled for special attention since 9/11, not a single person has been tied to Al-Qaeda or a terrorist act. The government trumpets its success in keeping the nation safe, but if you look closely at the thousands of investigations it claims are terrorist-related, what you see is a big credibility problem. Most were simply thrown out for lack of evidence. More than half the people who were charged and tried received no jail time. These are not big-time terrorists. Among the cases labeled as terrorists are hundreds involving foreign students who hired others to take English proficiency language exams, many involving credit card theft, and so on. Now, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act, which just passed the House by a vote of 404-6 in October, but has not yet been voted on in the Senate, could further accelerate the targeting of young Muslims and others on pre-crime grounds. This bill would set up a commission and a center of excellence to study the facts and causes of violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism. I think everyone in this room has probably heard about it. There's been a lot of discussion on the internet about how this bill could transform dissent into thought crime. That might happen. But I think its immediate purpose is to legitimate and expand ethnic and religious profiling, because in its language, it closely resembles this study produced by the New York Police Department, Radicalization in the West, the Homegrown Threat. And I just want to read you one passage. Quote, individuals who are attracted to radical thought usually live, work, play, and pray within enclaves of ethnic Muslim communities, communities that are dominated by Middle Eastern, North African, and South Asian cultures. 15 to 35-year-old male Muslims who live in male-dominated societies are particularly vulnerable. Middle-class families and students appear to provide the most fertile ground for the seeds of radicalization. It is useful to think of the radicalization process in terms of a funnel. Entering the process does not mean one will progress through all its stages and become a terrorist. However, it does not mean that if one doesn't become a terrorist, he or she is no longer a threat, end quote. That is a quote from that New York Police Department document. So at the very least, they're going to do massive surveillance, and if a person is not seen to be a terrorist, he will remain on the pre-crime radar as a permanent, quote, person of interest. Number 7, late last year, Congress rubber-stamped the wide range of lawless actions used by the executive branch to fight the war on terror when it passed the Habeas Corpus-Gutting Military Commissions Act. Now, there's a good summary of it in our toolkit, and I'm sure you all know it gives the president virtually unlimited power to target people anywhere in the world as unlawful enemy combatants on whatever criteria he chooses. Who would have thought that a decade ago we would soon be adopting methods associated with totalitarian dictatorships, kidnapping, torture, secret prison, secret detention without any due process? And the secret detention goes way beyond Guantanamo. As four-star General Barry McCaffrey stated, quote, we're probably holding about 3,000 people, you know, Bagram Airfield, Diego Garcia, Guantanamo, 16 camps throughout Iraq, end quote. That's 3,000 ghost detainees that the U.S. is holding without access to any kind of legal procedures and subject to harsh interrogation practices. The result has been a disaster for international law, human rights, and the Constitution. Number 8, quote, democracy dies behind closed doors, end quote. This is what a district court federal judge wrote as he struck down parts of the USA Patriot Act. We now have secret trials, secret prisons, a secret endorsement of torture, even as the Justice Department was declaring the practice, quote, abhorrent. secret legal justifications for secret spying programs which can't even be fully shared with the Attorney General, and a secret classified section to the May 2007 presidential plan about what the executive branch would do in case of national emergency, which could not even be shared with members of the House Homeland Security Committee who have clearance to enter a secure bubble room to examine classified material. We have more than 14 million new documents being classified as secret or top secret in 2006 alone. How can we have a democracy if the people don't know what is being done in their name? Number 9. Here's just a glimpse of what the government has not done to keep us safe. According to the Government Accountability Office report issued this October, the Energy Department has failed to carry out security improvements at 6 nuclear bomb factories and laboratories that Congress has said should be in place 4 years ago. Earlier this year, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission sent along a license to a phony company that didn't even exist to enable it to purchase radioactive materials for a dirty bomb. Number 10. So where do we stand in terms of national security and civil liberties? We are losing on both fronts. 84% of the nation's top foreign policy, intelligence, and national security experts across the political spectrum contend that the U.S. is losing the so-called war on terror, according to Foreign Policy Magazine's recent terrorism index. More than 90% said the world is growing more dangerous for Americans. And a Pew Global survey shows in key ally countries, in the key so-called war on terror countries, Egypt, Jordan, Pakistan, and Turkey, our nation's approval rating ranges from 21% to 9%. Now, you are all here because you know we are at a watershed moment both at home and abroad. Are we to be governed by our fears or by the Constitution and international law? Do we want to live in a full-fledged national security surveillance state in which the Bill of Rights, with the exception of the Second Amendment, is just words on paper? The choice is ours to make. Thank you very much.
You just heard a speech given by Nancy Murray at the Boston Tea Party Conference on 9/11 in December of 2007.
And this 2007 Boston Tea Party was a 9/11 and related issues event that had nothing to do with the present-day Tea Party. This speech was given during the Bush presidency, but things have only gotten worse under the Obama administration when it comes to our civil liberties. Bill Quigley, an associate director of the Center for Constitutional Rights and a law professor at Loyola University in New Orleans, wrote an article called 20 Examples of the Obama Administration Assault on Domestic Civil Liberties. And this was posted on the website truthaholics.wordpress.com in December of 2011. I'm going to read parts of it to you now. It starts out, "The Obama administration has affirmed, continued, and expanded almost all of the draconian domestic civil liberties intrusions pioneered under the Bush administration. Here are 20 examples of serious assaults on the domestic rights to freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of association, the right to privacy, the right to a fair trial, freedom of religion, and freedom of conscience that have occurred since the Obama administration has assumed power. Consider these and then decide if there is any fundamental difference between the Bush presidency and the Obama presidency in the area of domestic civil liberties." Number one of the 20 is the Patriot Act. On May 27, 2011, President Obama, over widespread bipartisan objections, approved a congressional 4-year extension of the controversial parts of the Patriot Act that were set to expire. In March of 2010, Obama signed a similar extension of the Patriot Act for 1 year. These provisions allow the government, with permission from a special secret court, to seize records without the owner's knowledge, conduct secret surveillance of suspicious people who have no known ties to terrorist groups, and to obtain secret roving wiretaps on people. Number two, criminalization of dissent and militarization of the police. Number three, wiretaps. Wiretaps for oral, electronic, or wire communications approved by federal and state courts, are at an all-time high. Wiretaps in year 2010 were up 34% from 2009, according to the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts. Number four, the criminalization of speech. Number five, domestic government spying on Muslim communities. Number six, Top Secret America. In July 2010, The Washington Post released Top Secret America, a series of articles detailing the results of a two-year investigation into the rapidly expanding world of homeland security, intelligence, and counterterrorism. It found 1,271 government organizations and 1,931 private companies work on counterterrorism, homeland security, and intelligence at about 10,000 locations across the U.S. Every single day, the National Security Agency intercepts and stores more than 1.7 billion emails, phone calls, and other types of communications. The FBI has a secret database named Guardian that contains reports of suspicious activities filed from federal, state, and local law enforcement. According to the Washington Post, Guardian contained 161,948 files as of December 2009. The Obama administration has done nothing to cut back on the secrecy. Number seven, other domestic spying. There are at least 72 fusion centers across the U.S. which collect local domestic police information and merge it into multi-jurisdictional intelligence centers, according to a recent report by the ACLU. These centers share information from federal, state, and local law enforcement and some private companies to secretly spy on Americans. These all continue to grow and flourish under the Obama administration. Number eight, the Electronic Frontier Foundation documented thousands of violations of the law by the FBI intelligence operations. Number nine, WikiLeaks. The publication of U.S. diplomatic cables by WikiLeaks and then by mainstream news outlets sparked condemnation by Obama administration officials who said the publication of accurate government documents was nothing less than an attack on the United States. The Attorney General announced a criminal investigation and promised that this is not saber-rattling. Government officials warned State Department employees not to download the publicly available documents. A State Department official and Columbia officials warned students that discussing WikiLeaks or linking documents to social networking sites could jeopardize their chances of getting a government job. Number 10, censorship of books by the CIA. Number 11, blocking publication of photos of U.S. soldiers abusing prisoners. Number 12, technological spying. Number 13, the use of state secrets to shield government and others from review. When the Bush government was caught hiring private planes from a Boeing subsidiary to transport people for torture to other countries, the Bush administration successfully asked the federal trial court to dismiss a case by detainees tortured because having a trial would disclose, quote, state secrets and threaten national security. When President Obama was elected, the state secrets defense was reaffirmed in arguments before a federal appeals court. It continues to be a mainstay of the Obama administration's effort to cloak their actions and the actions of the Bush administration in secrecy. Number 14, in another case, it became clear in 2005 that the Bush FBI was avoiding the Fourth Amendment requirement to seek judicial warrants and get telephone and internet records by going directly to the phone companies and asking for the records. The government and the companies, among other methods of surveillance, set up secret rooms where phone and internet traffic could be monitored. In 2008, the government granted the companies amnesty for violating the privacy rights of their customers. Customers sued anyway, but the Obama administration successfully argued to the district court, among other defenses, that disclosure would expose state secrets and should be dismissed. The case is now on appeal. Number 15, material support. The Obama administration successfully asked the U.S. Supreme Court not to apply the First Amendment and to allow the government to criminalize humanitarian aid and legal activities of people providing advice or support to foreign organizations which are on a government list as terrorist organizations. The material support can now be read to penalize people who provide humanitarian aid or human rights advocacy. The Obama administration Solicitor General argued to the court, when you help Hezbollah build homes, you are also helping Hezbollah build bombs. The court agreed with the Obama argument that national security trumps free speech in these circumstances. Number 16,
Chicago anti-war grand jury investigations. Number 17, punishing whistleblowers. Number 18, Bradley Manning. Number 19, solitary confinement. And number 20, special administrative measures. Special administrative measures are extra harsh conditions of confinement imposed on prisons, including pretrial detainees, by the Attorney General. The U.S. Bureau of Prisons imposes restrictions such as segregation and isolation from all other prisoners and limitation or denial of contact with the outside world, such as no visitors except attorneys, no contact with news media, no use of phone, no correspondence, no contact with family, no communication with guards. 24-hour video surveillance and monitoring. The Department of Justice admitted in 2009 that several dozen prisoners, including several pretrial detainees, mostly Muslims, were kept incommunicado under SAMs. If anything, the use of SAMs has increased under the Obama administration. These 20 concrete examples document a sustained assault on domestic civil liberties in the United States under the Obama administration. Rhetoric aside, how different has Obama been from Bush in this area? This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.